So hi, everyone. My name is Amrina Mazumdar. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Washington. And today I'll tell you about our work on perceptual compression for video storage and processing systems. This is work I did with my collaborators, Brandon Haynes, Magda Belazinska, Luis Seze, and Mark Oskin at the University of Washington, and Alvin Chung at UC Berkeley. So in this talk, we'll be talking about video content. Video is a fast-growing form of digital media. The hours per minute of video uploaded to YouTube alone is growing exponentially from 100 hours per minute in 2013, projected to reach like 10,000 hours per minute by 2021. This is just on YouTube. Moreover, the size of this video is also growing due to improved camera resolutions and display device characteristics. The proportion of 1K video is decreasing over time, and 4K and 8K video popularity is growing. The size of these videos growing also affects data bandwidth and power consumption on mobile devices for video playback. So these are all concerns as video grows in popularity. Typically, people don't really distribute videos as a series of image frames, but using video compression to trade visual redundancy for file size. So here I'm showing a video that plays at about 20 megabits per second. And on a mobile device, you would get 4 hours of video playback watching this video continuously. Video compression algorithms use details like noise and high frequency, as well as color perception and fast motion to get better video compression and reduce file size. In this work, I'll tell you about our technique for reducing the size of videos to get better storage capacity and playback on mobile devices by leveraging new perceptual cues. So I'll talk about how we integrate these new perceptual cues with standard video distribution systems to reduce file size and get better performance. Specifically, the perceptual cue that I'll be talking about is saliency. Saliency is a powerful perceptual cue for reducing file size because it leverages what people find important in a video frame. So on the left-hand side, I have this 4K 360-degree video, and on the right-hand side, I have what a neural network thinks is important when people are looking at it. So the white pixels are what people think is people might be attracted to, and the black pixels are what people are not necessarily interested in. And in the video, only about 15% of the pixels are actually important. So this is the kind of information we would like to leverage when we are doing our video compression work. Saliency is a popular new metric, but video compression algorithms don't really take advantage of them right now. And so some of the questions we wanted to ask when designing the system are, how can video services take advantage of these new perceptual cues to get better storage and performance? And also, why do they not do so already? One of the main reasons that people don't leverage these perceptual cues right now is that a lot of the prior work uses codecs that are quickly outmoded by the state of the art. So as people have developed these new custom video compression software, companies like Google and Apple produce new codecs that already improve them. So as an example, the most recent work integrating perceptual data with video compression was about 1,500 lines of code, and by the time it was released open source, the state of the art had already moved on past it. Moreover, there's nothing useful that it provides to a cloud system that manages video because there's no integration with the storage manager. So when you run a video storage service, you might want to do simple things like ask, how big is this file? Can I compress it just by, you know, kind of targeting a different lower bit rate? And can I control the quality? All these questions change when you introduce new perceptual cues, and so these are things that the state of the art didn't really let you manipulate. And finally, there's no interface for applications. The range of video applications is changing from virtual reality kinds of desktop applications to things on mobile devices. So video application concerns are things like, can I treat this video like a typical kind of MP4 video file, or do I have to repackage it for a standard player? So these questions drive the goals of a system that wants to use perceptual compression in a way that treats video like any other kind of video. So we want to be able to use modern codecs, we would like to have an API for storage, and we would like whatever the outcome is to be application portable so that applications that know how to use perceptual compression can get some interesting benefits, but applications like VLC or a video player can just treat it like any other video. To meet these goals, we designed Vignette, which is a system for perceptual compression and storage. Vignette has two components, a codec-free perceptual video compression framework, and Vignette Storage, which is a storage manager to manage these perceptually compressed videos. At a high level, the outcomes are that storage is reduced by 75 to 95% with little quality loss for users, and the resulting videos use 50% less power. There's no kind of magic here. We're just using these things that people understand about how people watch videos and integrate it better into technologies that exist already. Before going into the fine details of how we made Vignette work, this is kind of like an overview of a video is processed with Vignette. The first step is to upload a video. After that video is uploaded, we use a deep learning framework to produce a saliency map or a visual importance map for that video. Using that video, we execute saliency-based compression in the codec-free method that we developed, and then we write the compressed video to our storage manager. And then finally, you can stream these perceptually compressed videos to users for playback. The two components of our, you can think of this as being divided into the two components of our system. So the top part you can think of as vignette compression, and the bottom part as the vignette storage component. So now I'll go into a little more detail on each of them, starting with the vignette compression portion. So as I described earlier, when you upload a video, it's ingested into the vignette compression side of the system. The next step after that is to generate this perceptual map. And here we use a neural network to do that part. And particularly the neural network that we use is very high accuracy. It replicates human perception with like 99% accuracy, but it is very compute intensive. And so this is maybe one of the biggest bottlenecks in our system. But we designed the system in such a way as, you know, the machine learning community becomes more optimized, you could switch to a new algorithm very easily, or if you wanted to use a different perceptual metric that was not saliency, but maybe something like color blindness, you could easily switch those out as well. After that, in parallel, you also have to do something that is generating a tiling configuration. And this is the special sauce of how we're able to use perceptual compression without writing a whole new codec. What we do is we leverage a feature that exists in all video compression frameworks called tiling, and we do the perceptual compression on a per tile basis. So tiles are a codec standard feature where you divide the video into contiguous regions. And these contiguous regions kind of have, they have per tile parameters that you can set, like quality or bit rate. And these are the, this is the interface by which we drive perceptual compression. So you can express tiles in any kind of configuration you want. So here you can see on the bottom, I have a 6-tile configuration. On the right-hand side, I have a 2x2. And vignette compression has to enumerate all the different tiling configurations to pick the one that has the lowest overhead because of some constraints in the way that tiles are expressed. When you cut it up into tiles, you have to repeat information across the tiles. So these are some codec-specific problems that you have to evaluate all the different tiling configurations to pick the one that works best for a specific video. So this is per video. And we do this process exhaustively. So we enumerate all the configurations and pick the one that has the best quality and the lowest overhead. Once you have your saliency map and a set of tiling parameters that works well for your video, you can then combine the two to perceptually compress your video. And so here what we've done is for each of the different tiles, we picked some compression quality setting for that tile. And this is what allows us to get very good compression results, because we can divide the video into areas that are important and not important and downscale them using the video compressions software. So that describes the compression step of our pipeline. And now I'll move on to storing and streaming those videos. So as I mentioned before, we divide the video up into tiles, and then we divide the video up into tiles and then compress them. Typically, for prior work in saliency-based compression, if you wanted to maintain that perceptual information, you had to also include these saliency maps, which would result in like a 1.75 times size for the compressed video. Instead, what we contribute is a low overhead metadata that you include with the video, and this gives you all the same information as if you had the original saliency map, but at 8 to 100 bytes per video, so significantly less. Moreover, we also contribute a heuristic-based search to do that exhaustive tiling configuration search that I talked about before. This is the runtime of the whole vignette pipeline compression and storage. And you can see that the neural network part, the saliency in blue, takes about half the time. And then the other half of the time is finding the right tiling configuration, because effectively you're enumerating all the different types of tiling available for a large video and then evaluating the transcode on them. So this takes a significant amount of time. What we did is we observed that a lot of this overhead comes from motion vectors in the video and dividing them. So here I have a video and the bird is moving up, so all the motion vectors are also pointing up. And what we found is that you can use the motion vectors to guide your search for tiling. So the insight here is that you don't want to split tiles. You don't want to split motion vectors across tiles to increase that overhead. So using our heuristic-based search, we were able to cut the time by about 50% by really reducing the cost of this tile search. And there's a little bit of a drop. It's not the optimal result by using our heuristic, but this works well for if you wanted to rapidly produce a perceptually compressed result quickly. This is just a very high-level overview of how the system works. There are many more details in the paper. Now I'll move on to analyzing the performance and quality of the videos that Vignette produces. So now I think you maybe have more of an understanding of how we're able to reduce the size of this video so well. You can probably imagine what we've done is we've divided the video up into areas that are important and not important and downscaled the parts that were not important. And it turns out that the compression works really well on reducing them. So now I'll dig into evaluating the performance and quality of Vignette, as well as how it works as a cloud service in both cost and mobile playback. First, I'll talk about compression performance and quality. So the questions you might have here are, well, how small can we make the videos? How much quality loss do people see? So we'll talk about that. First, I'll talk about storage. We evaluated on a few different benchmark suites. A benchmark suite from YouTube that statistically sampled over their whole library. A Netflix data set that's representative of the high resolution entertainment video Netflix has. A VR360 benchmark that's like 4K, 360 degree content. And then the Blender benchmark suite, which are all 3D synthetically generated videos. So on the y-axis, I'm showing percent savings. So we want to save as much content as possible, we want to save as much storage as possible, so you want a higher bar here. And Vignette videos work really, really well. So what we did for this analysis is we said, okay, if a video is 20 megabits per second, I would like to keep the important parts at 20 megabits per second, but drop as much of the rest of the content as you can. And you can see that we do really well. It seems that there's a lot of wasted content if you understand what people find perceptually important, and Vignette is able to leverage that. We do a little worse on the YouTube videos, and my guess is because the YouTube videos have a wide range of resolutions, and so the smaller videos have much worse storage performance just because proportionally a lot less of the pixels are important. So that's storage. These numbers are meaningless if you don't know if the videos have good quality or not. So now I'll talk about the quality of those videos. So on the y-axis now, I have a quality metric called SNR, or signal-noise ratio. The only thing you need to know is that anything above 35 is good, and anything above 50 is lossless. And we use two metrics, one that is kind of like overall quality, and another that measures the quality with respect to this saliency metric. So it's weighted based on whether the parts of the video were important or not. So the light blue is overall. Overall, we do good. The dark blue is this eye-weighted metric. If you take into account this importance, we do really well, close to lossless. So this is a really good result, that you can target high resolution in the areas that are important while maintaining good quality. This is a quantitative result, though, and I know you might say, okay, you're studying user perception. These are people, so what do people think? We also did a user study. So you can actually, I'll have this link up at the poster session too if you want to go and pull up the videos on your phone. But we did a user study where we had people compare against a baseline, and we served them a Vignette video at different resolutions, and we asked them, which video do you prefer in quality, or can you not tell any difference? And we had people look at videos across the benchmark suites, about 16 of them. And it was a web form with mixed desktop and mobile users. The baseline was fixed at 20 megabits per second, and we varied the quality of Vignette videos between 1 and 20 megabits per second. So this gave us fine grain information about whether vignette videos were interesting or whether vignette videos were easily discerned or not. The results of our study are building out wrong on this slide. I apologize. But participants either preferred vignette videos or perceived no difference for videos that are 75% smaller. So you can see that they preferred the baseline is the blue bar, and you can see that as you made the vignette videos smaller, so as you go across the x-axis, people started to notice the quality of the videos degrading and started to prefer the baseline. But the green bar is vignette videos, and you can see that at least 75% of the users preferred vignette for videos at 20 to 5 megabits per second. So just to sum up, the vignette videos are 85% smaller on average while maintaining quality. And for 75% smaller videos in a real user study, people didn't really notice a quality impact. Now I'll talk about cost. If you were a video cloud provider and you wanted to use a service like Vignette, what would the impact be on your service? Is it practical to use? What's the impact on total cost of ownership? So we simulated storing and streaming a 1 million video library. So here I'm showing first the baseline and vignette. The green bar is the compute cost of running the neural network and doing transcodes. And then the pink section is the network bandwidth to stream these videos. So first, we simulated 100 million views, which is about 100 views per video in the library. And then we increase the number of views over time. So that's what's going to move across the x-axis. And what you're seeing is that over time, the cost of streaming these videos goes up. And because the vignette videos are much smaller, we are able to reduce the overall cost of distributing the videos by balancing the compute and network bandwidth. And so vignette's overhead is amortized at about 2,000 views. And then we did a quick analysis of the user level side on mobile playback. And what we did is we played all the videos in our benchmark suite using the baseline and vignette, and then we measured the battery life. So for the baseline, we consumed most of our battery life in about 3 hours, and with vignette, we almost doubled the playback time to close to 6 hours. So this is really just because the videos are smaller, but you get the same user experience. So we're able to provide better performance there. So to quickly sum up, vignette amortizes large transcode costs in about 2,000 streams per video, and vignette videos also reduce mobile playback power consumption. So that's really everything I wanted to say about vignette. We contributed a system that has two parts, a compression feature that provides codec-free perceptual compression, and a storage manager to work with these perceptually compressed videos. You reduce the storage size a lot, you get better power consumption for mobile viewers, and I have a poster later if you have questions, and you can also go look at the videos there. Thank you.
Great, we have time for some questions.
Hello, this is Shi from Google and UW before I joined Google. So quick question. I feel like the salience map plays a very important role in the final results. So is the final, are the final results sensitive to the salience map? In more detail, say, if you obtain different salience maps from different models, how the compression results vary? And is there a need to improve the ML models, which are used to generate the salience map? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, you could imagine having a very coarse map. So one of the things we talk about in our paper is how we like upsample from like a saliency map for every frame to just one canonical one for the video. And in the worst case, you could imagine saying all the pixels end up being important eventually. So then you wouldn't get any compression improvement. So the accuracy of the map is important, particularly like discerning what is not important, because that's where you get the benefit. And so, yeah, I think you could maybe use some coarser heuristic than a large convolutional neural network and get okay performance. But I think the reason this works so well is because it's built on a really well-studied model of what human visual importance is. For instance, and another thing in the paper is that this doesn't work that well for video analytics workloads, because turns out machines do not perceive visual importance like humans do. So,
great. One more question.
Hi, Rusty Sears at Apple. So when we serve like videos or images, we tend to have a bunch of different hardware decoders that we're targeting, so we have to produce a bunch of different versions. I'm wondering if you've tried taking the same saliency map and using it for different generations of video codecs. It seems like it should generalize and amortize the cost of the neural network pretty quickly, but.
Yes. So are you talking about hardware decoders for playback?
Yeah. So like maybe it's MPEG-2 or MPEG-4 or whatever, but the saliency map seems like it wouldn't care.
Yeah, the saliency map would not care. What would care are the configurations of tiling. So that's actually something I'm looking at now is like if you have more tiles, does that affect the performance on some types of hardware decoders versus others? The kinds of prior work in perceptual codecs, they don't really work well on hardware codecs because, you know, they work with like only one kind of thing and maybe the codec doesn't support it anymore. So that's something that like is kind of newly enabled that I'm looking at. Yeah. But it is absolutely something we're interested in.
Thanks.
Great. The next speaker can come set up. And maybe one more quick question.
Hi, my name is Jan Lagarden from SAP. So do you know if similar work on perceptual compression is also being done for audio data?
I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if people are working on it.
Thanks.
All right, let's thank Anita one more time.